What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast refusing to engage in any Halloween-based football puns. Coming up, we'll assess the championship from top to bottom, but not the middle. We'll round up the news and all the usual spooktacular fun. Damn it! Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And after a little pause, so two of us could go on holiday, we are delighted to be back in your ears. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined by Sam Parkin. How are you doing, Sam?
Really good, mate. Got an eclectic collection of Halloween decorations at the front door, ready for this evening's proceedings to get underway. Can't wait to hand out a few penny sweets.
Yeah. It seems to have got bigger over the years, doesn't it? Now, we always record this podcast remotely. Clarkie and I are usually in the same county when we do that. We're even closer than that today, Adrian.
we're in booths that are separated by a wall. That's it. I could literally knock for you right now. Seems a bit weird that we should really be in the same room, but it's just easier this way, isn't it? But yeah, nice to see you in real life.
Yeah, we are at the Athletic HQ, so thanks to them for loaning us a couple of booths to do the pod today. Reminder that you can follow us on X at EFL What There and other platforms at What the EFL. If you'd like to leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, that really helps other people find the show and it makes us feel good too. Last bit of admin is to say that we have partnered up with Quinbet for another season. To celebrate that, they've enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They're the leading provider for gambling support and they run the National Gambling Helpline. And I am not making this up. Serendipitously, an email has just landed in my inbox from Quinbet reminding me to stay in control with Quinbet's safer gambling tools. So they're clearly watching on as we record this podcast. Let's kick off today with a little bit of managerial news. Of changes in the dugout since last we spoke. Sam, we've got to get your thoughts on the one at Swindon. A surprise choice to replace Mark Kennedy. Were you stunned when you read that Ian Holloway had taken the job? What's the thinking here?
I don't think you can ever be stunned by a managerial appointment at Swindon over the last decade or probably longer. It's been John Sheridan, it's been Phil Brown, it's been David Flitcroft. Richie Wellens was a particularly fruitful period, which I hold very dearly to my heart, given the mayhem that has surrounded that club. So, no, not overly surprised, albeit when I heard Ollie's interview that he'd only appointed an agent 24 hours preceding him getting the call, bit bizarre.
In that scenario, you keep the money to yourself and just get a deal done, wouldn't you? I mean, what do you need an agent for?
I presume the agent's been spoken to and maybe said, I've just signed Ollie on the dotted line, if you fancy him. Listen, he's from down the road, isn't he? And he will galvanise the fans to a degree. The players need a little bit of energy injected. And the place is under a dark cloud at the moment, and that's due to the ongoing battles with the ownership and people not having full trust and full support really of everything that's going on above pitch level. So Ollie will bring his character and I'm sure that the players will enjoy it. From all the lads I played with, there is no one better to motivate a group of 11 lads going out there to battle. He's one of the best at that, but you have to think back to Grimsby just a few years ago where it went horribly wrong very quickly. Ollie doesn't really know the level, I would suggest anymore. And I think that was problematic when he went into Grimsby. But it's a big job that he's taking on because there's a real concern about Swindon dropping out of the Football League. That's how it stands at the moment. There's a real concern about it. They've been plummeting. Last year was a horrendous finish for a club that's got the ambitions if they can get things right off the pitch as they do. So it's a mess. It's a mess currently. I haven't seen them in the flesh this season. Good to see Harry Smith getting goals. This is obviously him back after a loan spell a few years ago. I can't remember if he was there permanent, but I think he scored in three consecutive now. And under Mark Kennedy, it was just a bit of a disaster. Some of the interviews towards the tail end, bizarre. It felt like the writing was on the wall, very much looking towards the statistics and pointing towards various little quirks that, you know, probably kept him in a job for a few more weeks. But yeah, it didn't go well. So we shall see for here. I can't confidently tell you that they're going to improve significantly. But yeah, I've got a lot of time for Ian Holloway. So for his sake, I hope this is one where he hits the ground running.
If bizarre interviews are what you're after, then he's probably your man. They got Colchester in the FA Cup at the County Ground this weekend. Felt inevitable, Clarkie, that Mark Robinson was going to leave Burton Albion after their start to the season. Bottom of the table, yet to win a league game. It was a risk for him, wasn't it, to leave what was a pretty cushy job looking after Chelsea's under-21s after he obviously had that really horrible end to his time at Wimbledon. Do you think that he gets back into senior men's football as a manager after this? It might be tricky for him.
I don't think so. No. Does he want to? You know, it's a brutal game, isn't it? And I do think genuinely a lot of coaches are just specialists in certain areas. You know, I think in general, you could be an under 11 coach. And you're one of the best on the planet at dealing with under 11s. That doesn't mean that you should progress and go 15s and go reserves and then get into the first team. Yeah, it happens to some, and fantastic if they can do it. But some people just have an area that they are better at. And you do get the feeling that development football might be better suited to Robinson. It's a bit of an embarrassment for the new Burton owners, isn't it? He was their man. He was their first appointment. So a bit of egg on face there. So it'd be interesting to see who comes in. They play some nice football. You know, I think average possession, fourth highest in League One, which you'd never think Burton Albion would be that kind of side at that level. But tellingly, I noticed that they ranked 17th for successful passes in the final third. So it's a lot of passes around the middle, around the back, without really going anywhere. Both ends of the pitch, poor. Second lowest expected goals, you know, didn't really create anywhere near enough. And at the other end, a bit of a soft touch, particularly from set pieces. I think they've let in 7 set piece goals. You look at the transfer business, 19 new signings. In my count, there's 19 new signings this summer. Too many new faces in the building at once, in my opinion. So, yeah, they've got to start again. Don't know which direction they'll take, but surely the favourite, Stephen Schumacher, is not going to get it. Because why would you want to? I think he can do better than Burton. I think he should be staying in the Championship.
Yeah, he is the heavy favourite, Sam.
Yeah, it's going to be like so interesting which way they go when you consider it's new ownership and they've obviously really recruited a manager to play better football. You know, perennially you think of Burton being overly reliant at the other end of the pitch on set pieces and loads of clean sheets, staying in the division by hook or crook, not playing particularly easy on the eye football. So if they're going to rip it up after a matter of months and go for a really experienced, tried and tested manager playing a similar ilk to they were a few seasons ago, that's kind of admitting failure, isn't it? So this is a really big decision. It didn't look like the results were coming for Mark Robinson. I think he did well to survive 7, really. I think we normally talk on the podcast 5-6 straight defeats. There's no real coming back from that. So he was given a little bit more time than maybe others. But having recruited a squad of players, young players, some talented, more experienced guys actually in the forward positions like Orsi and Bodin, it'd be difficult for them to just flip and all of a sudden be playing back to front football if some of the names that are suggested are close to the mark in terms of the new manager. So, yeah, this is going to be really interesting. It could save them this season, but where does it leave them longer term if this new model was going to go in such a different direction?
Well, we're talking League One, a couple of big wins this midweek, and what a turnaround for Bolton Wanderers. Slow start to the season. They won just one of their opening 6 in the league. They've won 6 of the subsequent 8, the latest of which a 4-1 walloping of Stevenage in their own backyards. They're good away from home as well, aren't they, Clarkie? 4 of their last 6 in the league have ended in victory. I felt like we were questioning whether Ian Evatt was going to last for much longer a while back. He's answered that pretty emphatically.
Yeah, he's toughed it out, hasn't he? He was in a bit of trouble, definitely. He was. because they were a bit of a shadow of their former selves earlier on this season. There was a hangover. We were saying, had he been ruthless enough with the sort of rebuild following the playoffs? And you know, the fans were questioning him, no doubt about that. But he's toughed it out. He's gone
literally
back to
stuck a nut on someone, didn't he, after a game the other day?
He did, yeah. I wouldn't want to look. I didn't mind a friendly headbutt back in the day after a few pints, but I wouldn't want to be friendly headbutting or getting a friendly headbutt off Ian Everett, that is for sure. He's gone back to 3-4-2-1, the old classic. The defenders have been good. Ricardo Santos has been better, and George Johnson, who Sam I know is a big fan of, he's done excellently. You see the goals the other day, two set pieces and then two crosses from the wing backs. I think they're really important, aren't they, to Bolton Wanderers. Sean, who's not a bad signing actually down the left, he made one, and Dacus Cogley from the other side. One thing I have noticed about Bolton this season that is different is that they're less possession based. So they used to pass through teams. That used to be the way they do it. They'd just grind teams out, a little bit like Man City. You know, we'd have all the ball, we'll outplay you. I think they ranked second for possession last season. 59%. The year before was 57%. This year, 52.7%. I think they're seventh for possession. So what that is, and you saw it against Stevenage, where actually Stevenage have more of the ball than Bolton, they're actually willing now to say, you know what, you have it, come on to us, and then we're going to have more space for Dion Charles, for Sean, for whoever it is, Adebayo, to hurt you on the break. And yeah, those guys are more than capable of doing it. John McAtee, for example, someone that needs a little bit of space to go and hurt a team. So a little bit of an adapted style, and it's starting to bear fruit for Bolton.
McAtee with a pick of the goals in that one for me. Also, 4-1 winners were Stockport, who stopped their stutter. Reading put to the sword at Edgeley Park. Louis Barry, Sam, we were impressed with him last season when he got 9 goals in League 2. He's already equaled that in League 1 this time around. I guess they're already trying to work out ways that they can sign him on a permanent basis.
Yeah, they've been heavily reliant on him, you know, especially during this run, which hasn't yielded many points, many victories. Obviously had a brilliant start to the season. I think they scored 7 in the opening 3 games. The subsequent 10, they've only scored more than one twice. One of them coming at Reading the other day. So yeah, he's had a terrific start to the season. I think they've been creating. They're right up there for expected goals, and they converted them in this game. And I will educate you two, because I don't imagine Clarkey was paying too much attention to Lincoln Stockport when he was drinking champagne at Dubai beach parties and you were quaffing Welsh craft ale, Matthew. The previous game, Lincoln 2, Stockport 1, he made 3 changes, Dave Challoner, at halftime. Sorry, this is old news for some people, including the goalkeeper. Ooh. Not an injury. Oof. Corey Adai got taken off for old Hinchliffe, who's been there through all their success many a year. Made a mistake, obviously. Read the riot act after this game, lambasted the whole squad and individuals, and they responded against what is, as we know, a competitive Reading side in the best manner, with the best performance of the season, with Adair back in and doing well. Onyango, right back on loan from, right centre half, sorry, on loan from Everton, very good. And Will Collar, I think, has been missing. He gets a goal in this game and really impactful. So, listen, they got a really good squad, and I would be incredibly surprised if this doesn't spark a little bit of a turnaround. I think a few of their big names have been a little bit indifferent to this start of the season, but the likes of Lewis Bate and Carl Wootton and the aforementioned Barry, you know, this is a team, in my opinion, that'll be around the playoffs minimum.
Yeah, big fan of Lewis Bate. Right, that's League One. There's a full slate of Championship fixtures this weekend, but rather than do some prosaic previews, we thought we'd mix it up a bit. We're going to talk about the top 6 and the bottom 6 next. And it's only right, Adrian, that we start this off with the team who are top of the table. They are Sunderland. They've got a healthy lead as well, haven't they? No one could cross the Black Cats' path, even if they wanted to. 5 points clear after 12 games. Any danger that as teams start to work them out, they get a bit more familiar with Reggie Ball, that it might slow down? I mean, it's got to slow down at some point, hasn't it? Because it's such a massive progression from where they were last season.
Yeah, no one would have called. Well, some people actually were calling it, but I wouldn't have predicted this at all. But no, they're top on merit. They've been the best team. What I think I like about Sunderland at the moment is that they They look like a top team. It's not like they're a team that are sort of fluking games, or, you know, everything's going their way, or that they've had a really ridiculously easy fixture list. They've played some tough teams, particularly at home, teams high up in the table, and they've by and large swept them aside, you know, playing a lovely brand of football as well, you know, passing through the lines, the confidence that Regis Labrisse has given the players to go and play and pass and receive the ball in tight areas is phenomenal. So, yeah, I think the players are really, really enjoying it. What I will say is that away from home, they've played it, that they've almost exclusively played teams in that are 15th or below, except for one, and that's Watford, and they lost that game. So how good are they on the road against the Championship's best? We don't know yet. That's the test. But the midfield of Dan Neil, the new captain, with Rigg and Bellingham, is flying, absolutely flying. You've got Isidore up front on loan, who's come in from Mayenda and has been superb. Mayenda, I think, is fit again. The wingers have been great. There's so much to admire about what Sunderland have done this season. And there's another... This is maybe one of the more telling stats, though, and this might be something that hurts them in the long run. They've used 10 less substitutes than anyone else in the Championship this season. They've made just 31 subs in 11 games. So that's less than three a game. Most are four or five a game, clearly. And you know why that is. They don't have the depth. They don't have subs. At the moment, when they've got one or two injuries, who can come on and change the games? When it's Isidore and Mayenda, fine. In other positions, I don't think the backups are quite as strong. So that is what might trip Sunderland up. They've got to get to January, stay in the top two if they can, and then will the owners go big? Will they invest, give the manager a deeper squad to get them over the line? Because football-wise, I think they're good enough. I do.
Yeah, I'd agree with Clarkey. I've enjoyed watching them, especially when they're at it, the forward players. But I think we collectively have questioned probably the centre-half pairing. I know Clarkey did it recently, and what an addition Meppham's been in the last few games. And yeah, not had the teams in the higher echelons of the division away from home as of yet, but I felt that Luton game, you know, when you consider how they rolled over to a degree in that playoff game a few years ago at Kenilworth Road, battered and bruised, bullied. They didn't have it all their own way this season, but they managed to get away from Luton with maximum points. So I think that shows you that there's character as well to go along with the natural quality that we're seeing displayed every week. And they won at Hull previously, another roll your sleeves up type of performance. So they look to have both sides to the game.
Well, Burnley are the closest to Sunderland. Scott Parker doing Scott Parker things in the Championship. The only game they've lost was against the Black Cats. They're unbeaten in nine ahead of the weekend. Disappointing against QPR, goalless draw last time out. Why am I so underwhelmed by them, Sam? Is it because they don't score very many goals?
Yeah, we don't want to be talking about the best defence, do we? For hours on end.
Boring.
But yeah, they're watertight, aren't they? And yeah, I'm loath to criticise Scott Parker because he's got the job done, hasn't he, previously? And I like the clobber on occasion.
Barnett? You like it?
I'm a fan of any Barnett, of any description.
If you could grow a Barnett, would you have a Scott Parker Barnett?
That's what I'd probably keep it nice and short, to be honest. Yeah. Well, I did buy a wig for my Hannibal Lecter at a Halloween party last week, but it was so bad that we abandoned it when we were getting ready for the party, and Louise just put mascara on my head, and it was tremendous. I looked like something out of Geordie Shaw. It was the best Hannibal Lecter's ever looked. Looked like I'd been offer a hair transplant. Anyway, I digress. I don't want to get stuck into Parker because he's done a brilliant job in a championship previously, but the statistics are mad. Like, 22nd for big chances, 20th for XG, 21 shots on target. And I noticed this morning, I was trying to, you know, think about whether it's just clinical, whether it's just those, you know, first couple of games where they've racked up a few goals, which is masking the statistics and making it not look as bad as they've been going forward. But they've scored 5 goals, I think, along with Sheffield United from outside the box. So, you know, they've taken half chances at best or scored a few from speculative efforts from outside the area. So they're probably overachieving a little bit, considering their points return from the actual performances. So they'll want to get better, and they'll want to get better as a forward unit. And I think They've got big players to come back. Manuel Benson, Aaron Ramsey, Lyle Foster's not really been paired with Fleming as of yet. And that would probably be quite a fruitful partnership. And there's defenders to come back into the mix as well. So they can't go through the season relying on Josh Brownhill to be their most their biggest source of goals, which he is currently. So I think it's natural to be underwhelmed, but I think we've seen previously that there's different ways to skin a cat. And if Scott Parker gets Burnley up this way, and I think Burnley had so long under Sean Dyche, they won't be so precious about the style being different to under Vincent Kompany. I don't think they were fully enamoured with that, especially not in the Premier League. So I think if Scott Parker gets them up and they can be some little tactical shifts throughout this season, and if they get back in the Premier League, then all will be well.
Well, third place in the table are Leeds United. We've spoken a lot about their injury woes, their squad decimation, the general tumult. We ought to be fucking impressed with where they are then, Clarkie, haven't we?
Fucking impressed, yeah. The home form, win at home, draw away, that might be the way they sort of grind their way. But, you know, they have only lost once so far this season. So, you know, they're not doing too bad. They just haven't blown us away yet, have they? Haven't blown anyone away, really, Coventry aside. That was a big win, but yeah, I think in all the other games they've not scored more than two goals, you know, so they're involved in a lot of tight matches, so maybe they don't look as fluent maybe as they did last year. I just think their finishing has been a bit off as well. I still think they're weaker than they were, and I still think that Daniel Farker is tactically not the best, and that he relies on magic. He relies on individuals like Nonto. Go on, Willie, give it to Willie. He'll go and do something. Or Ramazani or Joel Peru. Or, you know, such talented players he's got. I still think against lower blocks or mid to low blocks, where there's not a lot of space to run into, they kind of run out of ideas at times. When there's space to run into, Leeds are breathtakingly good. I mean, no one's had more shots from fast breaks. No one's had more goals from fast breaks than Leeds. But most teams know that about Leeds. So they try to deny them those opportunities. And that, for me, is the key part of their development as a team. They have to be better at facing opponents who know what their strengths are. And for me, how they adapt to that will determine where they finish this season.
Well, they are top of the table in terms of touches in midfield, 500 more than Burnley, who are second in that metric, thanks in no small part to the midfield of Tanaka and Rothwell. Apparently, Tanaka is nicknamed Tiger Tanaka after the James Bond villain, but Daniel Farker was quick to correct that in his post-Watford news conference, where he said, no, he is James Bond. He saved the world today. Steel. Crucial and decisive duels. He was James Bond for us. If you're that into it, give him the squad number 007 then, Daniel. Practice what you preach. Sheffield United are fourth in the table. Sam, looking to bounce back at the first time of asking, like Burnley, they've taken the two-point deduction in their stride, and they also got back on the horse by beating Stoke after those successive defeats against Borough and Leeds. Is Chris Wilder restoring his reputation, if indeed you think he needed to do that?
No, I probably don't think he needed to. I think that the recruitment was really eye-catching. I think we'd be fools if we didn't come into this season thinking that Sheffield United would be a contender, given his track record, his motivational skills, the way that his teams have wowed us tactically, I think, at times over the last 5, 10 years, serial promotion winner with different clubs. So that was a big win for them, absolutely, in light of the Leeds game and the Middlesbrough defeat. And he got a little bit of criticism, didn't he, for changing the system against Leeds after things have been going pretty swimmingly. And I think that's the one thing at the moment. And I think it's not the whole 11. I think that the centre-halves are playing really well. I think he's got two good fullbacks now in Burrows and Gilchrist. Vinicius Souza is a monster in the Championship. It's just how to configure that forward line that, if you look at the teams, he's shifting people around. He's trying to get the best out of O'Hare. He's trying to get Hayden Humour. He's trying to get Brewster going. And at the moment, it's a little bit problematic to get the amount of chances, first and foremost, and obviously that conversion rate up as well. So really positive win over Stoke to see Kiefer Moore and Tyrese Campbell get his first for the club. He all kind of wants to play the 4-4, then a 1-1. And that was the way he went here with Campbell supporting Kiefer Moore or playing with Kiefer Moore. So for those two to both get a goal, you would hope that would kickstart them in goal scoring terms. But again, like Burnley, it's based on solid foundation, 5 straight wins, 5 clean sheets at Bramall Lane, 8 clean sheets is the most in the division. So if it clicks for them going forward, which I fully expect it to do, they're absolutely a big contender to stay around the automatic positions.
Not sure that we'd say the same for West Bromwich Albion. If there was an award for the least impressive team in the top six, I think they'd probably win it, Clarkie. No wins in 6, 4 draws on the bounce, 3 of them were goalless. Can you give Baggies fans any positivity here that this is going to turn around?
All right, they've still got Tom Fellows. He's useful. We like Tom Fellows, the assist king. He's not assisted him any lately. Couldn't believe he was on the bench against, I think it was Cardiff. Was it the last game? Yeah, I think it was. Odd. You know, he's the one that he can rely on. It's guys like Mikey Johnson and Grady Dean Garner, who have been red hot at certain times for West Brom, that they've kind of gone AWOL, a bit missing in action. So, you know, they need a little bit more out of them. 1 goal in 5 matches West Brom have scored. So not good. And I was looking at the list of goal scorers. It's a very short list. 4 of them. It's November tomorrow. And 4 players have scored goals this season. For some clubs, 4 players might have scored on the opening weekend. Madja, Mowat, Grant and Malumbi. No one else has notched yet. So that's rubbish. That really is from a West Bromwich Albion point of view. What I'll say is, You've still got Corbran. And while they've got Corbran, I think there's hope because he is solid. He's been in these kind of sticky patches before and come through and got them going with sort of narrow wins, and then the confidence comes back. So, yeah, teams don't have a lot of joy against West Brom, do they? They're still hard to play against. Maybe to sort of push the teams above them, maybe Corbran's got a release the handbrake. I mean, is that a cliche that applies? I think it might be. You know, just let the players have a bit more freedom, maybe. I know that they've got more of the ball this year, so they're more controlled, they're controlling games better, but maybe just say to the guys, just freestyle a little bit rather than everything having to be a constructed pattern of play. That's what I think would benefit the Baggies.
All right, well, just behind them in the table are Blackburn Rovers, also struggling for goals. Shouldn't really surprise us, I guess, given that they've lost Sammy Smodics. Overall, though, Sam, this is a cracking start to a first full season in charge for your old pal, Big Johnny U.
Oh, they would have snapped your hand off to be in this position. The form at Ewood Park is sensational, but on the road, complete contrast. Don't think they've won, actually. Away from home, 3 defeats and 3 draws. And obviously the goals have dried up. And I think after leaving Sammy Smodics, I, for one, was really positive at the early weeks of the season at the players they brought in, Byman, Gay and Ahashi. Ahashi, none in 7 appearances since that brace against Bristol City. Gay's not scored yet in the league. And Byman, 8 appearances. So I think therein lies your problem, basically. They've dried up. The goals, they're never going to be the most creative side in the division. It's going to be based on strong foundation and a good defence, and that's despite losing, I think, Hayden Carter for a few weeks. Looking at some of the other personnel, Harry Leonard, remember him from last season? Came in, young striker, got a few goals. More of an out-and-out goal scorer maybe than those guys I've just mentioned. Ahashi, still obviously early days for him, and he's shown what a real impact he can be off the bench. But yeah, it's a little bit of a concern, this most recent form. I don't know why I've done it over 5 games, but 20th over the last 5. So it's been a little bit of a struggle, but absolutely it's been a fine start to the season. Positives, I think Cantwell beginning to show signs of what he can do. Very much a signing that I completely missed until a couple of weeks ago. He goes into that club. But yeah, it's something they need to arrest. I think it's Sheffield United up next, and that will be a low scoring, tight affair, I would imagine, but wouldn't be surprised if Blackburn took something from that game because they're set up incredibly difficult to beat.
Right, let's head to the bottom of the table then. We'll stick with you, Sam. Portsmouth propping up the rest. So disappointing for them, wasn't it? That win against QPR was followed by defeats or thrashing at Cardiff and then Sheffield Wednesday on Friday night. I guess they're already doing the sums as to how many points they'll need to stay up, but they need to string a couple of positive results together in succession before they can think about anything else.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, disappointing. Obviously, the Cardiff game to concede to in the manner that they did and so quickly in the game as well just put them completely on the back foot. And that came, you know, off the back of some much improved performances at Fratton Park where they'd been, you know, very much in the game. I remember Chris Wilder really being complimentary after their goalless draw down there not so long ago. So I think the Cardiff defeat was a real eye-opener. It could have been worse, clearly. They've now lost, what, two goalkeepers. So Jordan Archer played against Sheffield Wednesday, didn't look particularly comfortable, especially when asked to use his feet on occasion. But I think, understandably, I did notice, you know, this isn't a Portsmouth side under Messino that's going to roll the ball out and try and play through the thirds at the moment. I think the risks are too great for them. They're going to be a little bit more direct. They're going to play forward with an intensity and try and utilise Lang and Murphy's mobility in the wide positions. So it's not, I think, akin to what we saw during that League One success. And that's just the circumstances that they've been handed. Tough start to the season, really light squad, missing big names in Shaughnessy and Colby Bishop, to name probably the most prominent two. So they're behind the eight ball, if that's the phrase. And we'll wait and see how they respond, I think, to that Sheffield Wednesday defeat. Because I thought in the second half, Danny Rowles' tactics, his boldness in making the two changes, they just completely flipped that game on its head and completely dominated the ball in the second half. And it didn't look like at any stage, in truth, that Pompey were going to get back on level terms. So it's a squad that's struggling at the moment, I think, for confidence. They need probably a couple of back-to-back results to get them going. That QPR victory didn't prove fruitful enough, but absolutely, I'm already thinking about, you know, when can those players get fit and what's going to be the state of play in January? Do the owners roll the dice if they've still got a chance of staying in the division? That's going to be fascinating. And who knows? They could be galvanised, but at the moment, it looks like it's going to be a really difficult season for them to pull themselves away from trouble.
Second from bottom, we find Queen's Park Rangers. No surprise that Sam Swerve talking about them. Less of a pain in the arse for you, Adrian.
Thank you. I'll batter him. Yeah.
Marty Cifuentes, most in danger of being the next manager to get the Spanish Archer?
You're part of the problem here, Matt. Part of the problem. He's just signed a new contract. Come on. Yeah. Continuity, plan, you know? Everything I've been calling for on this podcast for many a year. Look, you know, down the A4, M4, whatever it is, that bit. Look at Brentford. We need a bit of consistency. We'll get there.
Yeah. In 20 years or so, you'll be fine. Yeah, but Sam's right. He has just signed a new contract. I worked on their game, didn't I, against Hull. That doesn't feel like it was long ago, and that was the day he signed his new contract. So it would be a bit weird, I think, to bin him off now.
Erik ten Hag signed a new contract in the summer.
Yeah, this is true. And I don't know, what's he got to work with, really? I mean, the striking situation is a bit of an issue. He's got two big lumps, hasn't he? He's got Frey, who scored, obviously, early on in the season, but has dried up. And he's got Silar, who I think, actually, is quite a handful, but hasn't scored yet. I mean, I like the goalie. I think that Nardi's to come in and done all right. But in general, my view of QPR is that they're just like a nice team, like a team that's quite nice to play against. They don't really tackle you. They're not that aggressive. The stats will bear it out. You look at tackles and interceptions and recoveries and all that nonsense. They're really, really low. But that's what I found when I watched them. I just thought, it's a nice match. You play, we'll play. You play, we'll play. And yeah, it's... I just don't think they're quite good enough at the moment, and certainly not good enough without the ball. And then at the other end, they lack goals. And that's a bad combo, isn't it? You know, easy to play against and not much punch up top. You're going to struggle to win games. And yeah, there's a bit of work for him to do coaching wise, because look, there's a lot of games between now and the transfer window. He has to get more of a tune out of the players. For me, I would get them playing more aggressively.
All right, a couple more teams to talk through at the bottom. We'll whip through these briefly if you don't mind. Luton, Sam, we've spoken a lot about them of late. Despite that recent derby delight, it has been a rotten return to the Championship for them.
It has, in terms of points and victories. I still think that the most recent two performances at Kenilworth Road showed that there's been a lot of work done, I think, over the international break, at how they can get back to what they were in that promotion season. And I definitely saw that at Coventry at the weekend, albeit Coventry were far and away the better side and deserved the victory. I thought they were very good, and I was not buying into the fact that Coventry are perennial slow starters and this is going to get better for them. I went into Saturday thinking, I'm not sure about Coventry. I think this could be a tough season for Mark Robbins, but I saw a real creative team, loads of good partnerships, loads of good players. They were fully at it at the weekend. So credit them from coming from two behind. But in that first 45 minutes, I saw a robust Luton Town. I saw two hungry front players, confident front players in Morris and Adebayo, who have not been that throughout the season. So to get those two scoring again, that holds the key for me if Luton are going to have a tilt at getting into the higher echelons of the division now. I think I counted four centre-halves that are missing as well. So they have been hindered a little bit. You think that there's Burke, there's Mengi, there's Amari Bell. They lose something not having Amari Bell the left-hand side of the pitch. Nakamba's still working his way back. So I think there's reasons to be cheerful, but absolutely those little passes that we saw Kaminski playing early part of the season to centre-halves in the 18-yard box, that wasn't evident at Coventry. I don't think it was evident in the Watford game. I don't think it was there for the Sunderland defeat either, a game in which they perform really well. So I think Luton have just stripped it back, and Rob Edwards does probably want to evolve as a coach and the style of the team naturally. But in the predicament they're in at the moment, I think it's back to the success they got a few seasons ago.
Sam, are you there? Place outside the relegation zone are Plymouth. Came from 3-0 down to draw against Preston last week. How do you beat Sunderland and Blackburn and get gubbed by Cardiff? Inconsistent would be the word I would use.
I mean, the contrast, and it's something that's getting spoken and written about so much at the moment, but the contrast between home and away is just it's incredible. They've had three wins away in 29 games in the Championship since they've been promoted, lost 18 of 29. And at home, 13 wins, 8 draws, 9 defeats, of which 5 came under Ian Foster. So they've had 4 defeats under Stephen Schumacher and Wayne Rooney since they came back up to the Championship. So it's quite incredible. I don't know what they do about it. I spoke to a journalist at Millwall the other day, and he said, this isn't a new thing, Sam. This has been going on for decades. This is a problem with the location, players wanting to come down there, the amount of travel that goes into it. They've looked at various different things. I mean, he name-checked managers from 25 years ago who did get a tune out of them on the road. I certainly didn't see it at Millwall. They were terrible. They were terrible. And I saw Morgan Whittaker have an incredible off night. Yet I'm sat there thinking, I know why the manager can't take him off, because he's liable to do what he did at the weekend and get them a point salvaged from a position where, you know, Wayne Rooney was about to get it again, both barrels from everyone in the national press. So incredible recovery. I think that's 4 times now they've scored in additional time. But going away from home, to go back to that point, and this was a shuffled pack. He made 5 changes, I think, for this game. So he's having a look at different things. Lewis Gibson out gives them a bit of a problem defensively. He's been colossal. But I think going away from home, you can't just hope you're going to be competitive like they were at West Brom and in one or two of the other games. I think they need to come up with a way of being more defensively minded and probably containment away from home, whether that's they played wing backs before, haven't they, under Schumacher, I'm sure. So yeah, they could easily put a third centre half in there, maybe play Morgan Whittaker centrally off a striker. You still have that threat with him and maybe a presence in front of him. But I think to continue going away in their current guise, the outcome's going to continue to be the same.
In 20th position, Adrian, we find Cardiff City, who still haven't got round to replacing Errol Bullitt after sacking him in September. But they might be thinking that they don't need to. Omar is unbeaten in the last 5, clean sheets in the last 3. Is he just going to get the gig then?
I'm pleased for Omar because he started at the bottom and he's worked really hard with his coaching. He's hungry to improve and, yeah, he's got a great opportunity. And look, clubs have given the gig to caretakers for less, haven't they? But they've done this before, haven't they? Steve Morrison, I think he was an interim, got the gig. Mark Hudson, same. And it, you know, then were sacked. You know, didn't last that long in the job. I actually think, kind of, I wouldn't change it. because it's going really well. He's made a good impact on the players. They're playing with more freedom. It's more fluency in this sort of, it's a 4-2-3-1, but there's a lot more interchanging. He's given certain young players a real opportunity that didn't have it before. You know, Ollie Tanner's playing regular. Alex Robertson, who we saw at Pompey last year, he was out of favour under Bulit, but he's played every game, I think. They've got Callum Robinson up front instead of a big lump, whether it's Kanga or one of the others. So it's all a little bit more fluid and better to watch. And I think they're having more fun, the players. They certainly, you know, playing with a bit more freedom. So yeah, it's working well. I don't think I'd touch it. Just let it ride until Omar comes knocking on the door and saying, what's going on? And then they'll have a decision to make. But don't change it. It's working.
If it ain't broke, don't break it. Finishes off then, Clarkie, for this feature with Stoke. I'm sorry, Stoke fans, but you just awe me to tears at the moment. This club, even a sexy young managerial appointment, can't spice things up. I mean, if Cannon isn't firing, where do the goals come from, Clarkie?
Yeah, it's a good point. I still like my boy Million Manhoof. I think he's got a little bit of flair about him. He does miss a lot. Yeah, it's not lived up to the hype yet, has it? You know, this Narcis Palac, you know, brilliant coach. They're pressing better. There's a bit more energy about them. And, you know, when it's worked well. They got a good, creditable draw with Norwich. They smashed Portsmouth. So there's signs there. But then in other games, they've not really laid a glove on the opponent, you know. And yeah, Sheffield United away, for example, 5 in the back, 4 in midfield, Cannon up front on his own, lambs to the slaughter. So yeah, and they conceded 28 shots in that 2-2 draw with Bristol City as well, which was a little bit worrying for Stoke and for Palac. Yeah, they haven't found that identity yet, have they? What I will say is that I think when Sam Gallagher gets fit again, because he's out at the moment with a hammy injury, I want to see him with Cannon. So I just think Cannon's not a guy that really plays up front on his own. Like, I think he needs someone else up there with him, and I think they'd make quite a good combination. But because of injuries, he's not been around enough. But let's give Palac, you know, benefit of the doubt. He's working on it. But I do think the next three games, I think they've got three winnable games coming up. Stoke, City. Who have they got? They've got Derby, Millwall and Blackburn coming up. And I think, you know, they need to win two of those three for sure. Just to renew the faith among the fans there.
All right, well, that is sort of a prediction. So I'm going to use that as a segue to take us to a prediction.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a prediction.
Let's see how we got on a fortnight ago. Basically, Adrian and Sam both got 4 points and I just got the one. So that means that Sam still has a comfortable lead, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's Sam 27, Clarkie 18, Matt 11. Yeah, Sam's annoying just because I've been having some good weeks. He's just been matching me blow for blow. I'm not making ground, but I believe I can draw him in.
Yeah, I'm just happy to be here, to be honest. Blackburn v Sheffield United is the first game up. It's an all-championship special this week. Go on then, Adrian. Who's going to win this one? What's the score going to be?
Look, Rovers have blanked in four of their last eight. The goals are dried up, as Sam said. I think Eustace is going to set up quite cautiously here. Big game for Blackburn. They kind of need to get the wins going again. 1-0 Blades.
Oh, that was going to be mine. Sam, what are you going for?
Surely the league leader gets to go first on the plum one of the week. It's got 1-1 written all over it for me. I'm delighted that Clarkie's shown his hand there. 1-1.
All right, I'll say 1-2 to Sheffield United. Sam, you can go first on this one then. Preston North End versus the City of Bristol.
Bristol City are my nemesis. You just don't know with them. I could see them going there and winning comfortably. However, Preston back to what they know best. 1-0. North End.
Hey, Jim.
Draw all day long. This is a draw. 5 draws in 6 for Bristol City. 5 draws in 8 games for Preston North End. They are the draw kings. 1 apiece.
I'll go for a Desmond. Why not? And I get to pick first on the last
you
one.
You weren't going to go draws until I rattled off those stats, were you, Matt? Were you? Be honest.
That's between me and this USB microphone. Sheffield Wednesday versus Watford last up. Owls against Hornets. Whoa, tricky one this. Watford, bit iffy away from home, I seem to recall. Sheffield Wednesday pushed Brentford all the way to penalties in the week. Let's say that they'll win this one 2-1, I think. What about you, Sam?
Yeah, can't disagree. Woeful away from home, aren't they, Watford? Enjoyed watching Sheffield Wednesday in that second half at Pompey. Home win, comfortable home win, 2-0.
Clarkie?
Yeah, I had 2-1, but I'll go bigger. Let's go 3-1.
Okay, nice. Giving Watford a goal at least. We'll let you know how we got on with those in next week's pod. We're nearly done for today. Let me remind you, though, that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. Quick tweet of the week to finish. Little change of tack from me here in what I've picked. I've gone for Stockport County's official account. This after that midweek win against Reading, which we chatted about earlier. Admin wrote, "The Hatters began a sequence of 6 scheduled home matches in all competitions with a pulsating and rampant victory." Star eyes emoji. Read the match report now, pointing down emoji. Hashtag Stockport County. It's just the words they've used here, Sam, which grabbed my attention. A pulsating and rampant victory. Thoughts on admin employing that kind of language?
Save it for Valentine's. No, not Halloween, is it? I'm not sure if there's a little in-joke there, but yeah, very. I don't mind the description, the descriptive nature of the tweet, but slightly odd. But I'm all for people trying something, so good on him or her.
I just think it's clunky. It began a sequence of 6 scheduled home matches in all competitions. I mean, a lawyer might have written that. Like, it's just a bit wordy, isn't it? It's just, we began the first of 6 matches in a row at home with a pulsating and rampant victory. Done. Keep it real.
Yeah, pulsating and rampant. Don't know if the person.
I don't think you need the two together.
It's one or the other, isn't it? And pulsating suggests it was more of an even game than a 4-1 victory. Anyway, sorry, Stockport admin. Keep up the good work.
16. They're probably 16, Matt. It's harsh, that.
Yeah, harsh from me. Sorry, I apologise. Let's end the podcast quickly then. We will be back with another one next week. Until then, remember to leave us a nice review if you'd be so kind, or just tell somebody that we're here. It always helps us grow the show, which is what we're looking to do. Thanks for your company today. Thanks to Adrian and Sam for their expertise. Bye for now.